Good Erev Shabbos. Baruch Hashem, it's Shabbos. But a good Erev Shabbos. This week's parsha is a double parsha. Parshas Nitzavim and Vayelech. It is also the day after the anniversary, the true anniversary of what we call 9/11. That it is on the Jewish calendar, it was Chaf Gimel Elul. That was the day that it happened. They used to call it, they didn't call it 9/11. Initially, all the newspapers called it a day that will live in infamy again, which was like a Pearl Harbor, they called it that. But 9/11, the Chaf Gimel Elul, that was the day that it happened. A day that changed all of our lives. The adults certainly remember how our lives literally changed. Things which were normal started becoming abnormal. Things which were abnormal became normal. I often say, I never saw a soldier in the United States, ever. It was something you saw in Israel. When you went to Eretz Yisrael, you walked in certain areas, you saw soldiers walking around with their guns. But when you were in America, you never saw a soldier. And yet, airports in the city, if Chas v'Shalom, you ever have to go to the city, and you're not going to visit the Lower East Side, but you see soldiers, you see police officers with M16s nowadays. I remember New York City started to reveal that they have anti-aircraft missiles. New York City has missiles to be able to shoot airplanes out of the sky now. After that, there were 44,000 officers in the NYPD. It was the sixth or seventh largest army in the world, the NYPD. Amazing. After 9/11, that's what it was. Used to be when you went to Eretz Yisrael and you wanted to go on the plane, you would go through a questionably operative metal detector. And you'd go through, and if it beeped, like Bezer Shemini, when you go to Eretz Yisrael, you go to the Kaisel, and you go there, you go through, if they see your firmayid, and you go through and it beeps, no matter what you're carrying, they'll just let you go through. But that's what it was. Going on a plane, you went on a plane through this thing, beep, okay, don't worry about it, it's gone. And you went on the plane, that was fine. Now, they have this type of, and I remember as they kept inventing all the different types of metal detectors, you'd go through, the world changed. It was an entirely different world before 9/11 and after 9/11. And that is discounting the day itself of 9/11. What it was like for those of us who were not necessarily there, but we certainly were alive and we certainly were observing it from afar. I remember I was learning Yeshiva Derech Yetzirah at the time. And on the road, the road behind Yeshiva is called Secret Boulevard. It is a three-lane highway each way. It's three-lane. And there were ambulance after ambulance after ambulance after ambulance just going down the road, all going towards the city. When I went home from Yeshiva later that day, every single day, I would go along a road, Beach Channel Drive, and you'd look over the water, because the Marine Parkway bridge is right there. You'd look over the water, and I saw for days. That was where I always saw the Twin Towers. And now all I see is smoke climbing up towards the sky. That's what we saw. I would come home, and all your rabbis and adults can tell you all the same thing. Every day that I came home, if I walked down my street, East 28th Street, as you walked down, you saw, because you go from K to J, you're looking towards the city, you saw the fumes coming up, and then you saw the two twin spotlights that they put up on that area of what you called Ground Zero at that time, and you saw it coming up. But of course, they were the people who were much, much closer to it. Hatzalamen, firemen, non-Jewish firemen, Jewish firemen, all the first responders who went there when everybody else is running away from something scary. And you see the videos, you see people running and running as far away from the buildings as they can. The smoke is behind them. And there were people, hundreds and hundreds of Hatzalamen, running toward the building, going upstairs when the buildings were still standing. My father came to that building. When he got there, he parked his car. He was driving a big Ford Excursion. He parked it two blocks away. It was far away. There was no Escalade back then. It was as big as it got. And he parked his Ford Excursion two blocks away, and he goes to the building. In 1993, my father had been by the building. 1993, same group of people that sent these airplanes into the Twin Towers, they put a bomb underneath the building. Tried blowing it up. My father went to that building. All that's all the guys, they went. They took all their gear. They went up three floors, and they're not exactly triathletes, so they weren't going to take all their gear up anymore. So they left their gear on three floors and they went up and down and took people out of the building. They thought the building would come down. It was set up that they would bomb the building in 1993. But they came back in 2001, and these same Hatzalah guys, now 8 years later, they're going up that building, and all the firemen are not allowed to go upstairs because they were told you have to wait till the building is safe, so they all wait downstairs. Hatzalah guys, whatever, building's safe, we'll go up, we'll save some lives. They all go up into that building and saving lives. And I've told the story about my father, Zechron Livracha, and when he got to that building, after he went up and down, picking people out, a fire chief went over to my father and said, you can't just go up and down the building, you need to wear a helmet at least. Okay, my father had a fireman's helmet in his car, so he went out to go get it. As he's going out of the building, it's him, a non-Jewish paramedic who he worked with, and another, a woman paramedic also he worked with. And the three of them are coming out of the building with 300 firemen waiting in the lobby on the bottom of the World Trade Center. And as they're coming out, my father said he heard an extremely loud noise that sounds like another airplane. What are you going to do at this point? You hear a new airplane coming. He starts running and he hears just a huge amount of noise. He and one of the paramedics, they run to the left. Another, this lady, runs to the right. And they go hide behind a pillar. It's the only remaining pillar outside of the World Trade Center. And as my father and this other fellow stand behind this pillar, suddenly everything explodes. Explodes. Things are flying by. You don't know what's hitting you. The air is totally blank. And my father, with absolute certainty, was sure that he had died. He is sure that he had died. And he was just sitting there, can't breathe. He had a watch with a light-up watch, and he put it close to his eyes. He couldn't see anything. And he was sure he was dead until he felt a vibrating in his pocket. It was a cell phone, which, by the way, is a shock because we knew no cell phones worked after 9/11. He got a phone call. It was his secretary. And she said, hello? Where are you? So he said, I don't know where I am. So he says to her, what happened? So she said to him, the building fell down. He said, what building? He said, one of the Twin Towers, North Tower, I think, fell down. Where are you? I'm under the building. That's where he was. And he put his clothing on top of his mouth as much as he could block it, let him clean it out. Everyone's coughing now. He hears cries, he hears screams. And once again, he does what a Yid does. He just does whatever he can. He gets back to work. He finds a fireman with his legs crushed, pulls him out, saves his life, puts him in a secure garage, and keeps moving and saving and doing whatever they can. And then he sees what he thought would be a great thing. He sees Hatzalah had a big mobile home. A big mobile home. They had tons of medical gear. So he goes to this mobile home, and he's inside, and unfortunately, he gets inside, and then once again, he hears that sound, which now he knew is not another airplane, but is another building coming down, and he's inside the mobile home. He looks out the front windshield as he watches the South Tower come down in front of him. This is what Yidden are. You know how many Hatzalah men died that day? Zero. Hatzalah were the guys who were running into the building more than anybody else. The zero Hatzalah guys died that day. I remember them saying there were at least two guys who were injured. Nachum Berman, who's not here right now, but Nachum Berman's father was actually pretty injured that day. But they were injured. One guy was walking around bleeding out of the back of his head. He didn't realize the whole day. Somebody pointed it out that he had shrapnel in the back of his head. Oh, he got checked out. Another guy, how did he get injured? Hatzalah was evacuating off of Manhattan Island to be able to go wherever they could. So this guy's on the boat to get people on the boat. And as the boat backs up, it crushed his leg between the boat and the pier, and that's how he broke his leg. This is how it's all the guys were getting injured. But they were saving lives. 9/11, the day that we recognize as a day of miracles, and obviously a day of tragedies, a number of Yidden were killed. A man around the block from me died in that building. He called his wife at the last phone call that he made. A day of miracles, a day of Nisan, and of course, a day where Hashem showed the whole world is in charge. I have a Rebbe who should live and be well, and he said that he wanted to watch a lot of the coverage, and every video that had, you know, watched as the airplane goes straight into the Twin Towers, unfortunately, with the airplanes, he said if you watch every video, every single person on the video says the exact same thing. It's something I don't usually like to say, but every single person says, as they're watching it, Oh my, and they say G-O-D. That's what they say. Every single person. Every single person. He said, in one moment, Hashem made the whole world say those words. Oh my Hashem. That's what every single person said. It was a moment of recognition that you have no control. These cavemen from 6,000 miles away can take airplanes and shut down your whole country, that the most powerful country in the world, kaput, shut down. And of course, the Americans don't get the message. The next day, you have the president getting on the air, which, call a cover to the president, quoting from Tehillim, yeah, he says, it talks about going, begates al mavis, la'ir, rocky, atoye, madi, he quoted that in English, even if I shall go into the shadow of death, I shall not fear, for you are with me. He's talking about Hashem. But they get back to the American cowboy who talks about how we're going to kill you all and we're going to run this place down to the planet. We're going to bomb every place in the world. And they spent the next 20 years bombing every place in the world. And then condemning, of course, Arzenu HaKadosha for protecting itself to try to kill. You know, at this, you know, 45,000 Yidden were just targeted in a rocket attack. That we can't defend ourselves. But it was a day for the whole world to recognize you don't have control. He does. As you might imagine, it's not just the Yahrzeit, the anniversary of 9/11, Chaf Gimel El, but in the coming week, first day of Rosh Hashanah is my father's Yahrzeit. There's a pasuk in this week's parasha that really spoke to me about something about my father. I don't often speak about my father. You know, saying tons of stories, it's a little difficult for me. But I'll say just a few stories, just to share something. And there's a pasuk in this week's parasha. The pasuk, this is parasha's parasha Yois of Netzavim and Vayelech. The pasuk says, "Ki haMitzvah Hazoyis," as Reb Milstein said last night in the packed parasha, "Ki haMitzvah Hazoyis." This mitzvah is referring to Torah. Is referring to tshuva. Asher Anochi Mitzavecha Hayoyim. That I, Hashem, commanded you today. Loi Niflesi Mimcha. It's not too distant from you. It's not in the heavens, this mitzvah. It's not in Shemayim that you should have to say, I need to climb up to Shemayim to go get the mitzvah. It's not far away in the oceans. The mitzvahs of Hashem are something you can do. The Torah and Tshuva, it's something you can do. Every single one of us. You don't need a ladder up to Shemayim. The Brittany this week spoke about helicopters. Are we helicopters? Are we airplanes? Are we elevators? Are we escalators? But you don't have to go up to Shemayim with a ladder to get it. Just try and you'll get it. Light Niflesi is a beautiful song also. But Light Niflesi, it's not so hard for you. Just try, and if you try, you'll get it. You'll accomplish it. My father's Zechanah Livracha was all about just try. If you just try, he used to say, it's so easy to say no. It's so easy to say no. You have to learn how to say yes. That's what he used to say. Of course, I can say to you, can you help me with this? No. No, you have to learn how to say yes and figure out a way to do it. That's what he used to say. My father did not have an easy educational life. He did not do well in yeshiva. It was funny, when my father was nifter, so I was sitting shiva and somebody came up, a man who had known my father when he was a little kid. He said that your father as a kid, it was interesting how this person said it. It was Rabbi Geisler from Minostava. Yeah, he was sitting all the way at the side, and he was almost as if he was speaking to himself. And he said, your father was always impossible. As a kid, he was impossible. And he spent his whole life doing everything that everyone thought was impossible. That's what he said. It takes a man to learn how to say yes. It's challenging. Whatever issues you think you have, my father had them as a kid. He had all those issues as a kid. He lived in an environment much less receptive to that type of kid. And he had to deal with a lot of the challenges. The yeshivas were not yet ready for the type of kid my father was. A man came to yeshiva this week, and he said to me, and it always is the same. He said, I was in eighth grade with your father. Now, it's always like that. Nobody ever says they were in yeshiva with my father, because he was in a different yeshiva each month of the school year. So, it was eighth grade with my father. He was in eighth grade. And the guy says, I have to tell you, I was pretty afraid of your father. Now, this man is 70 years old. He's telling me he's afraid of my father from eighth grade. That's what he said. It wasn't easy to be with him in yeshiva. But he spent his whole life doing everything that everyone thought was impossible. I'll tell you an interesting story of my father. My father worked with many organizations. He wasn't an organization person. Personally, he was the type of person who would like to do things on his own. If there's a problem, he'll take care of it. I don't need an organization to do it. I'll do it myself. There was a certain organization, a few organizations, Al-Hatzalah and other organizations, Kem Simcha. There are certain organizations my father was very, very involved in. There was one of these organizations. They needed to build a certain building that this building that they had was falling apart. And they needed a brand new building for this institution. So my father said, I want to help build it. Now, when he said help build it, he didn't mean I'll take out my wallet and here's my credit card and you go build it. No. From top to bottom, my father was going to design this building. He was going to figure out, it was a medical building, he was going to figure out how to make this building perfect. How to make this building receptive and people would love being there. And he wanted to make it as advanced as possible in a subtle way, and he was going to do this. It was amazing. He worked with my mother, she lived and be well, at every aspect of the building. My father was the type of guy, he made sure the tissue boxes were in the right spot in the building, and every bottle of medicine was in the right spot. And he worked in that building, And then he had this idea in his head. He said, I already worked on the whole building. So he goes to the head of this organization. He says, I've already worked on the whole building. Why don't you have somebody else sponsor the building? Put their name on the building. So you can get, I worked on the building, and then you'll get somebody to just lay out all the money that they don't need now because he already just built the whole building. You'll be able to have somebody else sponsor the building. And they said, are you crazy? Why would you do that? My mother definitely said, are you crazy? No, you can't do that. No. That's what I want to do. Somebody else. Get somebody else. So they got somebody else to sponsor this building. This person's so excited. Oh, I get to be the one who makes this building. Great. My father is excited. My father goes to the head of this organization. He says, I have one small request. What's your one small request? My father's father had been nifter sometime previous to that. And he asked, can you put a small picture of my father's Akela Bracha on somewhere in the building, in a closet, on a wall, and it'll just, because I want to have some stuff in the building that it's my father's picture is there. So they said, oh, that sounds simple. We'll go to the person who's sponsoring the building. We'll ask that person if it's okay. I'm sure we'll work it out. Obviously, you built the whole building. We'll figure it out. The other person wasn't aware of this. They go to the other person. The person says, no, absolutely not. I don't want anybody else's picture in this building. I sponsor the building. There will not be any memory of anybody else in my building. Oh, no, the head of the organization comes back to my father. He says to him, I don't know how to say this, but he's really not okay with that. I said, great, perfect, leave it like that. I don't want anything. I made a mistake. You will take the whole building and don't say anything about me. And my father goes to the dedication of this building and he is in the side, all the way on the side of the picture. And my father's like hiding on the side of the picture as this person gets honor, dedicated the building. It's all in honor of this person. What type of person does that? What type of person is hiding from glory that much? He wants to stay away to the side. He sponsors the building and puts somebody else's name on it. That's a crazy thing to do. And I said he didn't sponsor the building. He built it with his bare hands. And he worked in that building. And he helped in that building. It takes a crazy person to do this type of stuff. But it's a person who says, I recognize this pasuk. Loi neflesi mimcha. It's not too difficult. As long as you're ready to say yes. It's easy to say no. You have to learn how to say yes. In 1990, my father gave advice to one of the great rebbes of our time, who's still alive, he's living pretty well, that he should make a Hasidic trip, a revolution, bring back Hasidim to the olden lands in Russia, and bring them all back, and of course charge money for this trip, and make a huge fundraiser for this great, this Chassidus. And the Rebbe took this idea, and he took 10 buses of his chassidim with him back to Russia. It was the first trip. You know, you read all these trips of people taking tours of Europe. This was the first one. And they went back, and the Rebbe says, it's such a good idea, I'd like you to come on this trip, my father, to be a paramedic on this trip. So he brought three of his friends, including maybe his grandfather, Zecher Livracha, Benish Mandel, and they go back to Russia. They go to Mezhevizh, they go to all these old towns, Lizhensk, all the towns that nobody has heard of for 70 years because they were locked up in the Soviet Union. They go back to these towns. And when he's there, my father sees that on the side of this trip is actually a secondary trip going on. What is the secondary trip? There is an organization, and part of the organization, one guy had sponsored three Moilim to go to Russia to start giving brisim to people who had not been able to get brisim in 70 years. So you had kids, grandkids, great-grandkids, whole families that didn't have a bris. And this man, Albert Reichman, what a special person, Albert Reichman, one of the big supporters of Torah in the world, and he sponsored this trip with these three Moilim. And that was it. My father sees this. My father asks, what's going on? What is the story with this? And they explained to him, oh, we got sponsored. My father said, I want this mitzvah. I want this mitzvah. Brisim in Russia, the Soviet Union, I want this mitzvah. And from then, 1991, till the rest of my father's life, he would go back to Minsk, to Pinsk, to towns I never heard of, Baku and Kuba, and of course, Tbilisi, Georgia. And my father would go to Russia, and he'd come back and tell us stories about the KGB there. How he'd be sitting in a hotel room, and on top of every bed, you see like this fire alarm here? On top of every bed, there were three smoke detectors on top of the bed. Why were there three smoke detectors on top of the bed? So they would say in their room, wow, is this a hotel? Where's the towels? Suddenly, there was a knock at the door. Towel. That's how it worked. They were listening devices on every part of the room. They put three groups of people. They put them, every one of them, they put them on three floors. They said it's a suite. This suite, all the suites were in the same corner of the building. Apparently the listening devices were only on that corner of the building. So each one was right on top of the other. They also, if they ever wanted to make a phone call, they went out onto the porch and used a satellite telephone to be able to make a phone call that wouldn't be bugged, that wouldn't be recorded. But he went there and he went year after year after year, many months during the year, he'd go frequently. Because he made it his mission. Bris Milah. He named it after the organization of his Bris Milah. He decided to call it IBM. You guys don't know this. But IBM, when we were younger, that would have been like Apple. That was the name of the company. IBM, Microsoft. IBM was the world's biggest technology company. IBM, he called it IBM International Bris Milah. That was the name of his organization. And he went there. He learned how to do it. He helped with the Bris Milahs. What type of person? My father wasn't from Minsk, Pinsk, Kuba, Baku, Tbilisi. He wasn't from Azerbaijan. He wasn't from Belarus. He wasn't from any of these places. It's so easy to say no. It's very, very hard to learn how to say yes. Everybody in this yeshiva, every single person in this yeshiva, we all have the same issue, and I include myself in this issue. We all don't believe that we have what it takes. Every single one of us, we think we don't have what it takes. We think, oh yeah, we have what it takes when it comes to playing games. We have what it takes to be on the basketball court. But when it comes to transforming ourselves, we think we don't have what it takes. We think, I'm saying about myself, we think we don't have what it takes to be transformational. When my father was nifter at his levaya, the Mashkiach of Lakewood and Matasio Solomon came, and he said, Reb Shlomo Zakai, my father, was the Amud HaChesed. That's what he said. He said, Amud HaChesed. I wasn't listening, paying attention. My father's levaya. I wasn't really paying such close attention. But 30 days later, Rabbi Eli Mansour, who should live and be well, he spoke also by another event. And he said he was listening closely to that. He said, Rabbi Mansour doesn't exaggerate. He said that Mr. Zakharin was the Amud HaChesed. So said Rabbi Mansour, there are Shlesha Amudim in the world. Al Shlesha Dvar Mo'ilim Oimim. The world stands on three things. Al Torah, Al Avoida, Al Gemilas Chasadim. He said, Rabbi Mansour was saying that the world stands on this man. He is the Amud HaChesed. That we have all got to start replacing one of the pillars of the world. Rabbi Mansour said, Chacham Avadi was nifter at the same time. So Rabbi Mansour said, the world used to be on three legs. Rabbi Matasio was saying, we lost Amud HaChesed. Chacham Avadi was nifter, he said, we lost the Amud HaTorah. The world is teetering on the edge of Avoida of Tefillah. That's what I remember, that's what Rabbi Mansour said. But we're talking about someone just like the rest of us, who transformed himself into what Rabbi Matasio said, the Mashgiach of Lakewood said, was the Amud HaChesed, was the pillar of kindness in the world, of generosity. Why don't we believe in ourselves? There's a pasuk that speaks to every one of us, and the pasuk says these words, it's not too far away from you. If you try, you will succeed. If you try, you will succeed. You can accomplish Hashanah in a few days. Hashem is asking you one question, what will you be this year? And Hashem says, I know what you can be. Do you believe it like I believe it? Bez Hashem, you should have a beautiful Shabbos, an insightful Shabbos, a lichtig Shabbos, life full of cholent and happiness to come in, and all the good stuff, which delicious.